Where are we? 14 nearly minutes past the hour of 10 o'clock. Saturday morning, you may well be bringing your son or your daughter to watch them play soccer or hurling or football or camogie or whatever sport is in your area. Well, if you are, ask yourself this question. Are you one of those parents who shouts and roars instructions to your kid while jumping up and down, berating the ref from the sidelines? If you are, you might want to try having a silent sideline weekend. Bit of a movement, because the man behind it is Antonio Montero. He's going to explain now, hopefully, what sounds like a pretty damn good idea to me. Antonio, how are you doing? Are you all right?
Hey Dave, how you doing? How are you?
Good. You're not going out to any football or anything this morning, are you?
Well, I'm actually sitting in my car looking onto a football pitch about to meet my team now at 10:30. So we've got a game at 11:30 this morning.
As in we what? Have you got kids with you? Like, I presume it's not you, is it?
No. I'm involved with an under-15s team.
All right, an under-15s team. Perfect. That's exactly what we're talking about here then. Anything between 8 and 15 really is what I want to know about. Explain the concept, Antonio, of the silent sideline that's happening this weekend.
I suppose, look, the idea is really about giving, kids back their game. It's about, parents coming down, coaches as well, and really observing more and less coaching from the sidelines, less instruction. I mean, I think just when I tuned in there, I think I heard you say information overload, and I think that actually is a key word to this. It's the fact that, kids are going out to play games, they're being trained during the week, and when it comes to the game, on the sidelines, they'll be getting information from all angles. So five or six different people telling them what to do as they receive a pass or about to make a pass. And, this kind of information only thwarts the decision-making of any child, no matter what age they are. As a child plays the game, the decisions in their head are coming every couple of seconds. And if you're not telling them to do five or six different things, they'll probably end up doing the wrong thing.
Okay, but hold on a second. Are you actually asking parents to actually watch in silence? Surely the kind of, the exchange of banter and the shouting around a little bit is not a bad thing, is it not?
It isn't a bad thing. I suppose, when I'm looking at, when I went out to play football when I was a kid, there was usually two managers, one either side, and that was probably the most shouting you heard. And, most of the other shouting was done between the players. Now, with all the parents and grandparents and everybody that's coming down to the games and all the information and the instruction that's coming from the lines, it prevents the children on the pitch from actually talking. I suppose what I'm looking for on this day, it's only one game. It's really for parents and for coaches just to be aware of their demeanor on the line. So be aware of how much instruction they give. Is the instruction positive? Is the instruction negative? So really, this is a weekend where you're asking parents maybe to just stand back a little bit away from the line. If you're a club, maybe rope off the pitch 5 or 10 yards away from the line. Yeah. Parents should really just to observe and just to be aware, to be emotionally intelligent and emotionally aware of how the game makes them react in certain situations. Because when we come down to the game, we're all happy and jovial. As the game starts, it's great. And all of a sudden, our buttons are pushed and we turn into a different animal. We're now like a tiger prowling the sidelines, running up and down, shouting all sorts of instruction. I used to be like that.
Yeah, but hold on. Those parents just need to be hit. For God's sake, that's just out of hand. But a little bit of shouting and screaming isn't necessarily the worst thing. We know that when adults scream from the sidelines, that they're not just invading the children's playtime, they're preventing children from learning the game in a natural manner and that kind of thing. Okay, we understand that bit. But surely, the coaches who've maybe brought them out on Tuesday, Wednesday and Thursday night in a cold night, surely he has got a right to say, okay, now that the sort of 90 minutes and this is what it's all about or whatever it is, the hour, surely he or she has a right to vent something, no?
Absolutely, and what I say is coach when absolutely necessary, so don't give instructions as a child or a player is about to make a decision. I mean, there's certain times in the game when you can give instructions, i.e. when the ball is out. If the ball is over the other side, you might be able to speak to a player on this side.
Yeah.
Certainly, half-time is a great time to give instructions. Yeah. And, over the years that I've been coaching, once the game has started, it's very hard to try and get into a player's head in terms of instruction. You really have to get them on a one-to-one basis, either in training or at halftime.
Yeah, but isn't it more important to say that you shouldn't be trying to get into a player's head once the game has started in some ways? Because really, by that stage, your work is done, really.
Absolutely, yeah, absolutely. Your work is done. And that's exactly what I'm saying is you can't do it. It's very, very, very hard to do it. So, from my experience and watching other coaches, the very best coaches are great observers. They stand there, they watch, they give minimal instruction, they take notes, and then they go and work on it in the training ground. And that's how you improve and how you get the best out of your team. It's not by watching Match of the Day and looking at, Jose Mourinho on the line and trying to mimic the kind of things that he does, because, obviously he's got people working with that team during the week. So he's, and plus as well, that is also the an industry that's paid. So people get paid to play, and also people paid to see their team win. And you know, the zone that we're in is called a development zone. You know, so it's all about development.
No, exactly. Okay, listen, hold on. You're going to 15 or 16 year olds there now, and if you go right back to where it all starts, around 6, 7, 8, or 9 or whatever, like one of the funniest things about watching kids, and I did it for 10 years as well or more or whatever, and I used to love the Saturday and Sunday mornings things of doing all that, but like, you know, when they're very young, the ball is on the pitch, and maybe like there's 10 players aside, or 11 players there should be, well let's just say there's 11, that's 22 players. At the age of 8, all they do is run after the ball. They're all swarmed around the ball. Isn't it better just to let them learn that actually if they spread out a bit, they might actually have more fun and score a few goals?
Yeah, absolutely it is. I mean, on the game day, it's going to be very hard to try and coach that, because you know, you're having to speak to your whole team. And like you said, you know, the under-8s, under-9s, they all run around, they all run after a ball like a bee in a hive. But the thing is, to go back to your, if you want your players to spread out, then you need to work on that on training.
Exactly.
You need to break the game down and make a game.
So would you say then, Antonio, would you say really that, like, you know, like, stop screaming at the kids, you know, and because it doesn't make any sense, and that the best teacher of all is the game itself?
Absolutely. The best teacher of all is the game itself. And, you know, watching the kids play, you know, watching this weekend. I mean, for instance, someone asked me to go, oh, will you put on a session for my team? The first thing I start with is a game. I'll start with a game to see how they play the game.
Yeah.
And then I'll work back from the game to see what are the things we work on. Most people will start with isolated drills. But, you know, that's the game is the best teacher. The game absolutely is the best teacher. Most kids come down, they just want to play, they just want to enjoy themselves, they just want to score goals, and that's what it should be about.
But, you know, the other thing about it is that's really funny. If you were, like, sitting in your kitchen and you ask your kid to fix a plug or something, or ask your kid to do something specific about homework or something, you wouldn't be screaming at them. So why do they scream at them just because it's football?
Yeah, I mean, I suppose maybe it's something to do with putting on those jerseys, and now the game becomes real. It almost like... is the exact same of what we see on TV. Jerseys, two teams, fans, and that kind of stuff. But it just changes people's psychology. It changes their...
Yeah, but Antonio, do you know what I'm trying to get at here? I think really what a lot of it is, it's the parents living vicariously through their kids. It's really them. They're like, it's like as though the parents are shouting. They're really talking to themselves.
Yeah, true. I mean, there is a lot of that goes on, that parents unfortunately do that. And also a lot of parents that come down have never been involved in team sports before in their life, so that, you know, they understand about team sports, and that really it is about a team, and it's not about watching the game with a spotlight in your child, and every time something happens to your child, or every time your child makes a mistake, that you automatically feel that you need to either criticize or you need to give some sort of instruction. You know, I'm not saying never say anything, absolutely not, but I mean, you can give instruction without criticizing. You know, you can praise as well, but don't overpraise as well, because overpraising, you know, calling your child's name every couple of seconds, yeah, go on, this Johnny, Mark, whatever it might be. I mean, that also distracts the child, you know, because the child is having to look at you every time you call their name. Also, it can be quite embarrassing for the child as well.
Oh, yeah.
You'll come up against players who are a little bit smart and go, oh, is that your mum calling your name? Or, you know, so it can be a little bit embarrassing for the child as well. So parents just need to, you know, just stand back. Calm down, absolutely. Enjoy the experience of your child playing sport. It's an absolutely fantastic experience and long you've learned.
And also, like, I mean, like, you know, if you're preventing kids from learning in a natural manner, and, like, you know, if you have the ball, say, there's about three things basically you can do, you know, the dribble or pass or shoot or whatever it happens to be, they will learn themselves. Like, if you want to do algebra, you're going to have to do some addition and subtraction first, and that's pretty obvious, you've got to get there. They will learn that you have to do this, this, and this, and they're much better off doing it on their own than being, you know, shouted from the sidelines by some idiot who doesn't really understand what they're doing.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, you know, what a child sees on the pitch and what you see on the sideline is a completely different picture.
Yeah.
You know, you've also got a much better view. The child generally just has a view, you know, left or right, or even most kids are, you know, as they're starting out, they're playing looking down, so they're always looking at the ball, so they don't really try to get their head up. And that's, I suppose, is a thing that they'll learn as they develop.
Yeah,
so
I have
the picture is completely different.
Yeah, I have a quote here from John O'Sullivan, Changing the Game Project. He said, it's the introduction of adult values into kids' games. When I grew up, it was children competing against children. Now, more often than not, it's adults competing against other adults through their children. So listen, what can we expect then? Well, like, in terms of silent sideline game, for those going to matches right now as we speak, what should they be doing?
Well, if they can, they should literally just stand back away from the action and observe, you know, and say very little. I mean, absolutely, you know, if a team goes a goal or two goals down, you can encourage, but No, during the game, during the process of the game, as they're processing the information, you know, and deciding what to do with the ball, you know, do not shout at them. Do not give them instruction. You know, like I said, stand back. Encourage, absolutely encourage. But if you can, for one game, for one day only, for one game, say nothing, you know. And at the end of the game, you know, tell your child how much you love watching them play, how much you appreciate, you know, you coming out, and how much you appreciate the effort that they give, you know, because at the end of the day, look, all children develop at various rates through the various stages, and it's important to understand that not all children are the same. So one child might be able to adapt to something quicker. It might take another child 6-7 months. It might take him a year. So we just need to be a little bit more patient, you know. We can't expect the little 8 and 9 year olds to be doing the things that the guys in the Premier League are doing.
Okay, fair enough. But, and I have to say this one too, like, I mean, for instance, like, you know, you watch the Premiership on TV, you watch a Liverpool match, even when they're losing, which happens quite a lot lately, the crowd is really excited and they're really noisy. You watch a Manchester City game, that could be 4 or 5 up and there's hardly, you know, it's almost silence. I never understand that bit. But I do understand the power of the crowd. Like, you know, we're talking here about atmosphere, so you don't want... Do you want to get rid of atmosphere?
Oh, absolutely not. No, I don't want to get rid of atmosphere. I mean, what I'm looking to do is try and make the atmosphere better, but better for the kids that play. In the end of the day, it's their game. It doesn't belong to the parents. It doesn't belong, you know, to the coaches in a certain sense. It belongs to the kids that play with it, you know, on the field of play. It's their game. So it's certainly not about taking the atmosphere out of the game. It's actually creating a better atmosphere on the sideline, creating a sideline that is respectful towards the players and that is respectful towards the officials that officiate the game itself.
And would you go as far as to say that each club should have a silent sideline ambassador, as in, like, you know, a wagging finger person? Parent, shut up.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we're trying to do that at the moment with our club, with Castleknock Celtic. We're trying to get, you know, but the best ambassadors are the coaches themselves, you know. So, I mean, if we can get the coaches, you know, understanding and understanding how to behave and maybe understanding how to control their parents on the line, they're the best, because, I mean, they're the ones involved with the team. They're the ones coaching the team. And if it comes from them, exactly like it would if you were teaching kids in a class, you know, people will respond and people will respect it. But, you know, a lot of clubs who have the manpower certainly do have people walking the sidelines, making sure people are staying back behind the ropes and just making sure generally that it's a friendly atmosphere and that, you know, that anything doesn't kick off. Because already this season there's been 4 or 5 games that have been abandoned at different ages in the Dublin leagues.
Right. By the way, just speaking of kickoff, it's 4:50. When do you kick off this morning?
We meet at half 11.
Half 11?
Looking at me in the car going, what's he doing in the car?
Why isn't he getting out of the car? Okay, just one thing about, like, I mean, just even taking it away from the football pitch, it's true that children take their cues from parents, right? So it is a form of, you would say, emotional abuse that can carry further into life?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, again, it's about allowing the child to take responsibility for their game. I mean, if you allow a child to take responsibility for something, what's that going to do? Well, it's certainly going to help with their self-confidence. You know, if you constantly control your child, constantly do everything for your child, then you're not really going to build their self-confidence. And really, this is what about. Team sport is about building self-confidence. And it's a great way for a child to build self-confidence. It's a great way for a child to make new friends. And, you know, it's a fantastic way for kids to stay in sport, because if they have friends for life. You know, you'll have friends for life. I still have friends from when I played football at under 9s and the 10s. Some of them are doctors and dentists. So, again, you know, you got to be careful. They might be pulling your teeth out in a couple of years. So
it's okay, though, with 82,000 people at Croke Park, because these guys are adults playing at the pitch. You can shout and scream to your heart's content, yeah?
Absolutely, you can shout and scream. I mean, obviously, you know, abuse is not accepted. And, you know, the respect thing needs to come into, particularly into soccer and still into GAA as well. Well, yeah, absolutely, you can shout and scream. But, I mean, it's as the same with the professional game. You know, it's not really accepted to abuse. You know, you can't abuse. No player should deserve to be abused, whether they're paid or whether they're not paid, whether they're a volunteer. That sport is entertainment. People pay to be entertainment. We're in the development zone, you know, so this is about development. It's about encouraging kids. It's about trying to improve kids. It's about trying to keep kids in sport and trying to keep them enjoying the game. And most importantly, it's about, you know, they come out, the game is the stage. The game is their time to shine. Their time to show you what they've learned to training that week. I mean, if they haven't learned it, then we need to go back to the training.
Okay, by the way, it is like, by the way, 51552 is our number, and I'm going to let you go now in a second, Antonio, but just like, you know, you say taking your cues from whatever else, like, you know, there's football, live football on TV all over the place, from BT Sports and Sky and televisions all over, and Match of the Day, etc. And one of the things, like, an awful lot of the stuff that happens in terms of football, say, in the Premiership, which is what a lot of kids see, do they emulate that? Like, in other words, if they score a goal, do they run around the pitch jumping up and down? Does everybody go up and hug and kiss them and all the rest of it? Do they take a lot of cues from maybe stuff on Match of the Day that you'd rather they didn't?
I think for most part, the kids that take the cues, they take the positive. There's a little bit of diving that goes on, but, you know, you watch an under-8 and under-9 game, there's no diving. I mean, some of the tackles that are going in, all you can hear is shin pads hitting against each other, and it can be quite physical stuff for the little lads. But, yeah, look, when they score goals, I think they do take the positive. Yeah, like I said, there's a small bit of diving. Most of it's positive, but, I mean, all that stuff can be developed, and, you know, it's all good habits that are developed through good coaches that pass them on to the kids. You know, and you speak to your kids, your team and your players, and you tell them what's acceptable and what's not acceptable. And it's quite easy. You know, kids are adaptable. Kids are resilient. You know, they'll take on any information you give them, whether it's good or bad.
Okay, by the way, just finally, Antonio, you sound like you're from the same part of the world as me, at least certainly on the east coast of Ireland. So where's the Montero bit coming in?
My mum was Irish. My dad was Portuguese. The name is actually, Montero is actually Italian, so it's kind of a great-great-grandfather or something like that, you know, so yeah.
All right, very good. And by the way, this is not the first time you've done this. You've done this before, haven't you?
Yeah, so this is the third one. So we did one last year, and the first one I did was in March, about a year and a half ago. So, I mean, all in all, we've possibly up nearly 100 clubs that are kind of getting involved in
right.
it. Now, it's no official bodies have kind of come up or stepped out and said, yeah, we're definitely going to do this. We backed this. A lot of the leagues have backed this, you know. But I would love for some of the official bodies, i.e. the GAA. I know the GAA president spoke about, you know, incorporating a silent sideline before.
Yeah.
You know, the FAI certainly could come out and back it as well. You know, I mean, at the end of the day, this is for the kids. It's to benefit the kids, nobody else. You know, and like I said, and I will reiterate this: it's not about taking the atmosphere out of the game.
Yeah.
You know, it's about trying to encourage less coaching from the line.
Well, if people want to find out more, they can go to silentsideline.org and you can get full information there. And good luck this morning, Antonio. Who are you playing this morning, by the way?
We're playing St. Kevin's boys in the All-Ireland. So, yeah, it's going to be quite a game.
Well, in the interest of impartiality and fair play, and I am here on RT, I better say good luck to both teams, although one of you is going to lose. Ha! Goodbye. Thanks a million, Antonio.
Cheers.
Good luck.
Thanks,
take it easy.
Bye.